Siobhan Chapman here. I am pleased to welcome back to the show our UBS Asset Management Monthly Macro Podcast. Each month we hear from the top investment professionals from the UBS Asset Management Multi-Asset Team. Today I am pleased to introduce our speakers, Evan Brown, Portfolio Manager and Head of Multi-Asset Strategy, and Fatou Kanté. With that brief introduction, I'll pass it over to you to host today's session.
Thanks, Siobhan. Welcome, everyone. So today we'll dive into what's happening in the economy related on U.S. fiscal and tariff policy. So I'll kick it off. Evan, you know, in recent months, we've seen a divergence between soft and hard macroeconomic data. And we got a couple macro data points last week, including the non-farm payrolls on Friday. So how are you looking at the economy right now and the outlook going forward?
Yeah, sure, Fatou. Thank you. And we have seen a divergence in the so-called soft data, which is really just surveys of consumers and businesses on how they feel, and the hard data, which is the real economic activity. So soft data had really deteriorated throughout the year, more and more concerns about the tariffs and the like, while the hard data, so jobs, consumption, manufacturing, has been pretty resilient. And now we expect to see some convergence there, where actually the soft data, the survey data, is starting to rebound with reduction in the tariff burden we've seen and the improvement in financial markets. So we are seeing consumer confidence rise. We are seeing business surveys show some improvement. And the hard data is set to cool a bit. So it's not happening in earnest yet. Like you said, we had the employment data Friday. It was still pretty good. But we do expect, you know, tariffs have been put in place, not nearly as severe as originally proposed by President Trump. But we are seeing a meaningful lift from an effective tariff rate of 2.5% all the way up to 15%. Now, just for your context, it was 25% as of Liberation Day. So we're somewhere in the middle here. That is going to be a, you know, effective tax hike on consumers. It's going to make goods more expensive. And so we're likely to see consumers pull back a bit on spending, see businesses likely slowing hiring a bit, but it's not kind of this emergency moment like we had when it looked like we had a much more severe increase in tariffs. So ultimately, we think, you know, soft data and hard data kind of meet in the middle. And what do you get? It's kind of a muddle through economy. We're looking at underlying growth around 1% of a 1% GDP compared to, you know, the high 2% GDPs that we've gotten over the last couple of years.
Yeah, so, you know, as you mentioned, the administration has pedaled back on tariffs, generally speaking, and particularly following the U.S.-China tariff negotiations, we saw the S&P 500 recover some of its losses, and it's now back in positive territory for the year. But, you know, given that forward P is back at 21 times earnings, do you think there's more upside from here this year?
Yes, yeah, so in short, We do think there's still more upside from here. And a big conversation we're having with clients is clients just say, how can markets be up here trading at elevated valuations again right in front of a growth slowdown? But we've looked back historically at times where you've had some kind of catalyst, some kind of event, and then as soon as you start seeing the improvement in the soft data, in the survey data, usually the market is rising alongside that, even as the hard data deteriorate, and which is exactly what we're expecting to see. And so, you know, this dynamic in the market is a discounting mechanism. It's discounting future cash flows further out, and market wants to look through this near-term blip, and we think it's fair. I mean, as much as valuations are elevated, we are seeing earnings revisions breath, like a lot of upgrades happen. The dollar has weakened significantly this year. That's actually a huge support for U.S. company earnings. It makes U.S. companies more competitive. It helps with translation back into dollars. So overall, you know, we're most focused on the earnings dynamics. We're seeing plenty of upgrades, and we think that has some room to run. So overall, optimistic through the rest of the year. The main thing is that we don't get something that breaks, right? We don't have the labor market fall off a cliff. We really don't think that's going to happen. But you know, we'll be watching the speed and severity of that cool down, which again we think will be mild, but we'll be mindful of you know, a more significant setback in the economy.
Yeah. It might be worth it to, you know, take a step back and just reflect on where we are now with tariffs, because a lot has changed over the last couple months. So can you maybe provide us with an update on the state of play, including recent legal cases on the matter?
Yes. So, so like I said, 15% effective tariff rate. I mean, on the legal cases, there was a challenge to Trump's using the International Emerging Economic Powers, Emergency Economic Powers Act to place his tariffs. And, you know, this is likely to go up to the Supreme Court. And I would say even if the Supreme Court says Trump can't use this particular authority to dial up tariffs, then he still has plenty of different, you know, authorities, different laws that he can employ to essentially get what he wants on tariffs. So I don't see this court ruling as particularly meaningful. Where we go from here, I mean, on that tariff rate, I think there's upside and downside risk to that. I mean, the upside, not just risk, but we're probably going to get an expansion of the sectoral tariffs that have been put in place. We know there's steel and aluminum, there's auto tariffs. We're going to see tariffs on pharmaceuticals and semiconductors, although those have been largely telegraphed, and I think markets are broadly pricing those in at this point. Could get some upside on reciprocal tariffs. We're looking at Europe in particular, for example. But I actually think there's downside risk on China tariffs. You'll remember at the beginning of the year, Trump put the 20% tariffs on just penalizing China for allowing ingredients used in fentanyl to be exported. And we actually think there's kind of low-hanging fruit as U.S.-China negotiations are happening as we speak right now, that China could take some steps to limit the export of those ingredients. And you could actually see those tariffs come down on China. So, look, we're going to continue to get noise here, but I think overall the shock value is of these tariff announcements has dimmed. We've already seen max trade uncertainty. The president's no longer talking about needing to close every trade deficit with every country. So this is increasingly the tariffs more of a micro issue as opposed to a macro issue. And as a whole, I think U.S. companies are showing the ability to be flexible and use different levers across supply chains and the like, and pushing through tariff costs to consumers. But overall, margins should be okay. Company earnings should be okay. And, you know, we continue to have a very flexible and kind of dynamic U.S. corporations here. So overall, like the economy muddling through, U.S. earnings should do okay, and we move forward.
Yeah, well, staying on this topic of policy, a lot of investors have recently been thinking about fiscal policy and its potential impact on markets. Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, it's reignited concerns over the U.S. fiscal situation. So could you discuss how this might impact the long-term attractiveness of U.S. assets and the potential implications for the U.S. economy?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of nuance here. I mean, we all know that ultimately the public debt in this country, the trajectory that we're on is unsustainable. We've got, you know, 6-7% deficits as a percentage of GDP as far as the eye can see. But I would say you know, it's the big, beautiful bill. It's not as big as was previously suggested. Actually, when you put together the deficit increases as a result of the bill, but offset that with the revenues raised by tariffs, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Organization, which is nonpartisan, they've scored the bill, and they essentially said, actually, when you include the tariff revenues, that this will, on the margin, reduce budget deficits over the next 10 years. So there's no move here to significantly reduce deficits, but at least we're not widening out deficits with this bill. And I think what that means is just, yeah, there's this upward pressure over time on U.S. yields until we kind of get our act together on that issue. But I don't think that there's going to be any kind of like panic moment caused by the bond market this year. I think that the market knows and understands more or less what's going to go through Congress and is okay with it here with the 4.5% 10-year yields. What I do think we all need to keep an eye on is this particular section of the bill, which is section 899. It's essentially what people are calling a revenge tax. It's saying, you know, if another country like Europe, for example, has a tax on U.S. companies that we find unfair, like the digital services tax on some of our tech companies, this will give the Treasury the authority to tax companies on their income, but also critically tax income that foreign investors get on their U.S. assets. And right now, the Senate is reviewing this. I mean, the bill's passed the House, but the Senate's reviewing and deciding whether to keep this in, whether to water it down a little bit. I think, you know, when you start to threaten, it's one thing to be threatening, you know, tax hikes on goods and tariffs and the like. But when you're threatening capital flows and a taxation on capital flows, that's a little bit of a different story. I think that's one of many things that is getting people, investors globally, to kind of question U.S. assets and you know, the just policy uncertainty that is contributing to some volatility in U.S. assets here and an outperformance of assets outside the U.S. that we've seen. And this is another thing that contributes to that. So we'll be seeing what the Senate does over the course of probably this next week, and what that how that Section 899, whether that gets watered down or not. But you know, I think if that gets incorporated into the bill, you're likely to continue to see this dollar weakness that we've seen year to date.
Evan, as always, thank you so much for your time. It sounds like you and the team are doing a good job of capitalizing on opportunities globally. And it'll definitely be interesting to see how things develop on the fiscal and tariff front in the coming week. So thanks, everyone, for listening in.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.